Chapter 36. Web of the Pattern. Master Gill took them to a corner table in the common room and had one of the serving maids bring them food. Rand shook his head when he saw the plates, with a few thin slices of gravy-covered beef, a spoonful of mustard greens, and two potatoes on each. It was a rueful, resigned headshake, though, not angry. "Not enough of anything," the innkeeper had said. Picking up his knife and fork, Rand wondered what would happen when there was nothing left. It made his half-covered plate seem like a feast. It made him shiver. Master Gill had chosen a table well away from anyone else, and he sat with his back to the corner where he could watch the room. Nobody could get close enough to overhear what they said without him seeing. When the maid left, he said softly,
"No, why don't you tell me about this trouble of yours? If I'm going to help, I'd best know what I'm getting into."
Rand looked at Matt, but Matt was frowning at his plate as if he were mad at the potato he was cutting. Rand took a deep breath.
"I don't really understand it myself," he began.
He kept the story simple, and he kept trollocs and fades out of it. When somebody offered help, it would not do to tell them it was all about fables. But he did not think it was fair to understate the danger either, not fair to pull someone in when they had no idea what they were getting into. Some men were after him and Matt, and a couple of friends of theirs, too. They appeared where they were least expected, these men, and they were deadly dangerous and set on killing him and his friends, or worse. Moraine said some of them were dark friends. Tom did not trust Moraine completely, but he stayed on with them, he said, because of his nephew. They had been separated during an attack while trying to reach Whitebridge, and then, in Whitebridge, Tom died, saving them from another attack. And there had been other tries. He knew there were holes in it, but it was the best he could do on short notice without telling more than was safe.
"We just kept on till we reached Camelin," he explained.
"That was the plan, originally. Camelin and then Tarvalin." He shifted uncomfortably on the edge of his chair. After keeping everything secret for so long, it felt odd to be telling somebody even as much as he was. "If we stay on that route, the others will be able to find us, sooner or later."
"If they're alive," Matt muttered at his plate.
Rand did not even glance at Matt. Something compelled him to add,
"It could bring you trouble, helping us."
Master Gill waved it off with a plump hand.
"Can't say as I want trouble, but it wouldn't be the first I've seen. No bloody dark friend will make me turn my back on Tom's friends. This friend of yours from up north now, if she comes to Camelin, I'll hear. There are people keep their eyes on comings and goings like that around here, and word spreads."
Rand hesitated, then asked,
"What about Elida?"
The innkeeper hesitated too, and finally shook his head.
"I don't think so. Maybe if you didn't have a connection to Tom, she'd winkle it out. And then where would you be? No telling. Maybe in a cell. Maybe worse. They say she has a way of feeling things. What's happened, what's going to happen. They say she can cut right through to what a man wants to hide. I don't know, but I wouldn't risk it. If it wasn't for Tom, you could go to the guards. They'd take care of any dark friends quick enough. But even if you could keep Tom quiet from the guards, word would reach Elida as soon as you mentioned dark friends, and then you're back where we started."
"No guards," Rand agreed.
Matt nodded vigorously while stuffing a fork into his mouth and got gravy on his chin.
"Trouble is, you're caught up in the fringes of politics, lad, even if it's none of your doing. And politics is a foggy mire full of snakes."
"What about—"
Rand began, but the innkeeper grimaced suddenly, his chair creaking under his bulk as he sat up straight. The cook was standing in the doorway to the kitchen, wiping her hands with her apron. When she saw the innkeeper looking, she motioned for him to come, then vanished back into the kitchen.
"Might as well be married to her," Master Gill sighed. "Finds things that need fixing before I know there's anything wrong. If it's not the drain stopped up or the downspouts clogged, it's rats. I keep a clean place, you understand, but with so many people in the city, rats are everywhere. Crowd people together and you get rats. And Camelin is a plague of them all of a sudden. You wouldn't believe what a good cat, a prime ratter, fetches these days. Your room is in the attic. I'll tell the girls which. Any of them can show you to it. And don't worry about dark friends. I can't say much good about the White Cloaks, but between them and the guards, that sort won't dare show their filthy faces in Camelon.
His chair squeaked again as he pushed it back and stood.
I hope it isn't the drains again.
Rand went back to his food, but he saw that Matt had stopped eating. I thought you were hungry, he said. Matt kept staring at his plate, pushing one piece of potato in a circle with his fork. You have to eat, Matt. We need to keep up our strength if we're going to reach Tarvalin. Matt let out a low, bitter laugh.
Tarvalin! All this time it's been Camelon. Moraine will be waiting for us in Camelon. We'd find Perrin and Egwene in Camelon. Everything would be all right if we only got to Camelon. Well, here we are, and nothing's right. No Moraine, no Perrin, no anybody. Now it's everything will be all right if we only get to Tarvalin.
We're alive, Rand said, more sharply than he had intended. He took a deep breath and tried to moderate his tone.
We're alive. That much is all right. And I intend to stay alive. I intend to find out why we're so important. I won't give up. All these people, and any of them, could be dark friends. Master Gil promised to help us awfully quick. What kind of man just shrugs off Aes Sedai and dark friends? It isn't natural. Any decent person would tell us to get out, or something.
Eat, Rand said gently, and watched until Matt began chewing a piece of beef. He left his own hands resting beside his plate for a minute, pressing them against the table to keep them from shaking. He was scared. Not about Master Gil, of course, but there was enough without that. Those tall city walls would not stop a fade. Maybe he should tell the innkeeper about that. But even if Gil believed, would he be as willing to help if he thought a fade might show up at the Queen's Blessing? And the rats. Maybe rats did thrive where there were a lot of people, but he remembered the dream that was not a dream in Berlon, and a small spine snapping.
Sometimes the Dark One uses carrion eaters as eyes, Lan had said. Ravens, crows, rats.
He ate, but when he was done, he could not remember tasting a single bite. A serving maid, the one who had been polishing candlesticks when they came in, showed them up to the attic room. A dormer window pierced the slanting outer wall, with a bed on either side of it, and pegs beside the door for hanging their belongings. The dark-eyed girl had a tendency to twist her skirt and giggle whenever she looked at Rand. She was pretty, but he knew if he said anything to her, he would just make a fool of himself. She made him wish he had Perrin's way with girls. He was glad when she left. He expected some comment from Matt, but as soon as she was gone, Matt threw himself on one of the beds, still in his cloak and boots, and turned his face to the wall. Rand hung his things up, watching Matt's back. He thought Matt had his hand under his coat, clutching that dagger again.
"You're just going to lie up here, hiding?" he said finally.
"I'm tired," Matt mumbled.
"We have questions to ask Master Gil yet. He might even be able to tell us how to find Egwene and Perrin. They could be in Camelon already if they managed to hang on to their horses."
"They're dead," Matt said to the wall.
Rand hesitated, then gave up. He closed the door softly behind him, hoping Matt really would sleep. Downstairs, however, Master Gil was nowhere to be found, though the sharp look in the cook's eye said she was looking for him too. For a while, Rand sat in the common room, but he found himself eyeing every patron who came in, every stranger who could be anyone or anything, especially in the moment when he was first silhouetted as a cloaked black shape in the doorway. A fade in the room would be like a fox in a chicken coop. A guardsman entered from the street. The red-uniformed man stopped just inside the door, running a cool eye over those in the room who were obviously from outside the city. Rand studied the tabletop when the guardsman's eyes fell on him. When he looked up again, the man was gone. The dark-eyed maid was passing with her arms full of towels.
"They do that sometimes," she said in a confiding tone as she went by, "just to see there's no trouble. They look after good queensfolk, they do. Nothing for you to worry about."
She giggled. Rand shook his head. Nothing for him to worry about. It was not as if the guardsman would have come over and demanded to know if he knew Tom Marilyn. He was getting as bad as Matt. He scraped back his chair. Another maid was checking the oil in the lamps along the wall.
"Is there another room where I could sit?" he asked her. He did not want to go back upstairs and shut himself up with Matt's sullen withdrawal. "Maybe a private dining room that's not being used?"
"There's the library," she pointed to a door. Through there, to your right, at the end of the hall. Might be empty this hour.
Thank you. If you see Master Gill, would you tell him Randolph Thor needs to talk to him, if he can spare a minute?
I'll tell him, she said, then grinned.
Cook wants to talk to him, too. The innkeeper was probably hiding, he thought, as he turned away from her. When he stepped into the room to which she had directed him, he stopped and stared. The shelves must have held 300 or 400 books, more than he had ever seen in one place before. Cloth-bound, leather-bound with gilded spines, only a few with wooden covers. His eyes gobbled up the titles, picking out old favorites. The Travels of J.N. Farstrider, The Essays of Willem Manaches. His breath caught at the sight of a leather-bound copy of Voyages Among the Sea Folk. Tam had always wanted to read that. Picturing Tam, turning the book over in his hands with a smile, getting the feel of it before settling down before the fireplace with his pipe to read, his own hand tightened on his sword hilt with a sense of loss and emptiness that dampened all his pleasure in the books. A throat cleared behind him, and he suddenly realized he was not alone. Ready to apologize for his rudeness, he turned. He was used to being taller than almost everyone he met, but this time his eyes traveled up and up and up, and his mouth fell open. Then he came to the head, almost reaching the 10-foot ceiling. A nose as broad as the face, so wide it was more a snout than a nose. Eyebrows that hung down like tails, framing pale eyes as big as teacups. Ears that poked up to tufted points through a shaggy black mane.
Trolloc!
He let out a yell and tried to back up and draw his sword. His feet got tangled and he sat down hard instead.
I wish you humans wouldn't do that, rumbled a voice as deep as a drum.
The tufted ears twitched violently, and the voice became sad.
So few of you remember us. It's our own fault, I suppose. Not many of us have gone out among men since the shadow fell on the ways. That's, 6 generations now. Right after the War of the 100 Years, it was.
The shaggy head shook and let out a sigh that would have done credit to a bull.
Too long, too long. And so few to travel and see, it might as well have been none.
Rand sat there for a minute, with his mouth hanging open, staring up at the apparition in wide-toed, knee-high boots and a dark blue coat that buttoned from the neck to the waist, then flared out to his boot tops like a kilt over baggy trousers. In one hand was a book, seeming tiny by comparison, with a finger broad enough for 3 marking the place.
"I thought you were,"
he began, then caught himself.
"What are—"
That was not any better. Getting to his feet, he gingerly offered his hand.
"My name is Randall Thor."
A hand as big as a ham engulfed his. It was accompanied by a formal bow.
"Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Holland. Your name sings in my ears, Randall Thor."
That sounded like a ritual greeting to Rand. He returned the bow.
"Your name sings in my ears, Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Holland."
It was all a little unreal. He still did not know what Loyal was. The grip of Loyal's huge fingers was surprisingly gentle, but he was still relieved to get his hand back in one piece.
"You humans are very excitable," Loyal said in his bass rumble. "I had heard all the stories and read the books, of course, but I didn't realize. My first day in Camelin, I could not believe the uproar. Children cried and women screamed, and a mob chased me all the way across the city, waving clubs and knives and torches and shouting, 'Trolloc!' I'm afraid I was almost beginning to get a little upset. There's no telling what would have happened if a party of the Queen's guards hadn't come along."
"A lucky thing," Rand said faintly.
"Yes, but even the guardsmen seemed almost as afraid of me as the others. 4 days in Camelin now, and I haven't been able to put my nose outside this inn. Good Master Gill even asked me not to use the common room."
His ears twitched.
"Not that he hasn't been very hospitable, you understand. But there was a bit of trouble that first night. all the humans seemed to want to leave at once. Such screaming and shouting, everyone trying to get through the door at the same time. Some of them could have been hurt.
Rand stared in fascination at those twitching ears.
I'll tell you it was not for this I left the steading.
You're an Ogier, Rand exclaimed. Wait, 6 generations? You said the War of the 100 Years. How old are you?
He knew it was rude as soon as he said it, but Loyal became defensive rather than offended.
90 years, the Ogier said stiffly. In only 10 more, I'll be able to address the stump. I think the Elder should have let me speak since they were deciding whether I could leave or not. But then they always worry about anyone of any age going outside. You humans are so hasty, so erratic.
He blinked and gave a short bow.
Please forgive me, I shouldn't have said that. But you do fight all the time, even when there's no need to.
That's all right, Rand said.
He was still trying to take in Loyal's age. Older than old Sen Bui, and still not old enough to... He sat down in one of the high-backed chairs. Loyal took another, made to hold 2. He filled it. Sitting, he was as tall as most men standing. At least they did let you go. Loyal looked at the floor, wrinkling his nose and rubbing at it with 1 thick finger.
Well, as to that now... You see, the stump had not been meeting very long, not even a year, but I could tell from what I heard that by the time they reached a decision, I would be old enough to go without their permission. I am afraid they'll say I put a long handle on my axe, but I just left. The elders always said I was too hot-headed, and I fear I've proven them right. I wonder if they have realized I'm gone yet. But I had to go.
Rand bit his lip to keep from laughing. If Loyal was a hot-headed Ogier, he could imagine what most Ogier were like. Had not been meeting very long, not even a year, Master Alvir would just shake his head in wonder. A village council meeting that lasted 30 minutes would have everybody jumping up and down, even Harald Luhan. A wave of homesickness swept over him, making it hard to breathe from memories of Tam and Egwene, and the wine spring inn and Bell Tyne on the green in happier days. He forced them away.
If you don't mind my asking, he said, clearing his throat, why did you want to go, outside so much? I wished I'd never left my home myself.
Why, to see,
Loyal said, as if it were the most obvious thing in the world.
I read the books, all the travelers' accounts, and it began to burn in me that I had to see, not just read.
His pale eyes brightened and his ears stiffened.
I studied every scrap I could find about traveling, about the ways and customs in human lands, and the cities we built for you humans after the breaking of the world. And the more I read, the more I knew that I had to go outside, go to those places we had been, and see the groves for myself.
Rand blinked. Groves?
Yes, the groves. The trees. Only a few of the great trees, of course, towering to the sky to keep memories of the steading fresh.
His chair groaned as he shifted forward, gesturing with his hands, one of which still held the book. His eyes were brighter than ever, and his ears almost quivered.
Mostly they use the trees of the land and the place. You cannot make the land go against itself. Not for long. The land will rebel. You must shape the vision to the land, not the land to the vision. In every grove was planted every tree that would grow and thrive in that place, each balanced against the next, each place to complement the others, for the best growing, of course, but also so that the balance would sing in the eye and the heart. Ah, the books spoke of groves to make elders weep and laugh at the same time, groves to remain green in memory forever.
What about the cities? Rand asked.
Loyal gave him a puzzled look.
The cities the Ogier built. Here, for instance, Camelon. Ogier built Camelin, didn't you? The stories say so.
Working with stone.
His shoulders gave a massive shrug.
That was just something we learned in the years after the breaking. During the exile, when we were still trying to find the steading again. It is a fine thing, I suppose, but not the true thing. Try as you will, and I have read that the Ogier, who built those cities, truly did try. You cannot make stone live. A few still do work with stone, but only because you humans damage the building so often with your wars. There were a handful of Ogier in, Kyrian, it's called now, when I passed through. They were from another steading, luckily, so they didn't know about me. But they were still suspicious that I was outside alone so young. I suppose it's just as well there was no reason for me to linger there. In any case, you see, working with stone is just something that was thrust on us by the weaving of the pattern. The groves came from the heart.
Rand shook his head. Half the stories he had grown up with had just been stood on their heads. I didn't know Ogier believed in the pattern, Loyal.
Of course we believe. The Wheel of Time weaves the pattern of the ages, and lives are the threads it weaves. No one can tell how the thread of his own life will be woven into the pattern, or how the thread of a people will be woven. It gave us the breaking of the world, and the exile, and stone, and the longing, and eventually it gave us back the steading before we all died. Sometimes I think the reason you humans are the way you are is because your threads are so short. They must jump around in the weaving. Oh, there I've done it again. The elders say you humans don't like to be reminded of how short a life you live. I hope I didn't hurt your feelings.
Rand laughed and shook his head.
Not at all. I suppose it'd be fun to live as long as you do, but I never really thought about it. I guess if I live as long as old Senbui, that'll be long enough for anybody.
He is a very old man?
Rand just nodded. He was not about to explain that old Senbui was not quite as old as Loyal.
Well, Loyal said, perhaps you humans do have short lives, but you do so much with them, always jumping around, always so hasty. And you have the whole world to do it in. We Ogier are bound to our steading.
You're outside.
For a time, Rand, but I must go back eventually. This world is yours, yours and your kind's. The steading are mine. There's too much hurly-burly outside, and so much has changed from what I read about.
Well, things do change over the years. Some, anyway.
Some? Half the cities I read about aren't even there any longer, and most of the rest are known by different names. You take Kyrian. The city's proper name is Alkai Ryan Alan, Hill of the Golden Dawn. They don't even remember for all of the sunrise on their banners. And the grove there, I doubt if it has been tended since the Trolloc Wars. It's just another forest now, where they cut firewood. The great trees are all gone and no one remembers them. And here, Camelin is still Camelin, but they let the city grow right over the grove. We're not a quarter of a mile from the center of it, right where we sit, from where the center of it should be. Not a tree of it left. I've been to Tyr and Ilion, too. Different names and no memories. There's only pasture for their horses where the grove was at Tyr, and at Ilion the grove is in the king's park, where he hunts his deer, and none allowed inside without his permission. It is all changed, Rand. I fear very much that I will find the same everywhere I go. All the groves gone, all the memories gone, all the dreams dead.
You can't give up, Loyal. You can't ever give up. If you give up, you might as well be dead.
Rand sank back in his chair, as far as he could go, his face turning red. He expected the Ogier to laugh at him, but Loyal nodded gravely instead.
Yes, that's the way of your kind, isn't it?
The Ogier's voice changed, as if he were quoting something.
Till shade is gone, till water is gone, into the shadow with teeth bared, screaming defiance with the last breath to spit in sightblinder's eye on the last day.
Loyal cocked his shaggy head expectantly, but Rand had no idea what it was he expected. A minute went by with Loyal waiting, then another, and his long eyebrows began to draw down in puzzlement. But he still waited, the silence growing uncomfortable for Rand.
The great trees, Rand said finally, just for something to break that silence. Are they like Avendasora?
Loyal sat up sharply. His chair squealed and cracked so loudly Rand thought it was going to come apart.
You know better than that. You, of all people.
Me? How would I know?
Are you playing a joke on me? Sometimes you Aielmen think the oddest things are funny.
What? I'm not an Aielman. I'm from the Two Rivers. I never even saw an Aielman.
Loyal shook his head, and the tufts on his ears drooped outward.
You see, everything is changed, and half of what I know is useless. I hope I did not offend you. I'm sure your Two Rivers is a very fine place, wherever it is.
Somebody told me, Rand said, that it was once called Manetheran. I'd never heard of it, but maybe you.
The Ogier's ears had perked up happily.
Ah, yes, Manetheran.
The tufts went down again.
There was a very fine grove there. Your pain sings in my heart, Randalthor. We could not come in time.
Loyal bowed where he sat, and Rand bowed back. He suspected Loyal would be hurt if he did not, would think he was rude at the very least. He wondered if Loyal thought he had the same sort of memories the Ogier seemed to. The corners of Loyal's mouth and eyes were certainly turned down, as if he were sharing the pain of Rand's loss, just as if the destruction of Manetheran were not something that happened 2,000 years ago, near enough, something that Rand only knew about because of Moraine's story. After a time, Loyal sighed.
The wheel turns, he said, and no one knows it's turning. But you have come almost as far from your home as I have. A very considerable distance, as things are now. When the ways were freely open, of course, but that is long past. Tell me what brings you so far. Is there something you want to see, too?
Rand opened his mouth to say that they had come to see the false dragon, and he could not say it. Perhaps it was because Loyal acted as if he were no older than Rand, 90 years old or no 90 years old. Maybe for an Ogier, 90 years was not any older than he was. It had been a long time since he had been able to really talk to anyone about what was happening. Always the fear that they might be dark friends or think he was. Matt was so drawn in on himself, feeding his fears on his own suspicions, that he was no good for talking. Rand found himself telling Loyal about Winter Night. Not a vague story about dark friends, the truth about Trollocs breaking in the door and a fade on the quarry road. Part of him was horrified at what he was doing, but it was almost as if he were two people, one trying to hold his tongue while the other only felt the relief at being able to tell it all finally. The result was that he stumbled and stuttered and jumped around in the story, Shadar Logoth and losing his friends in the night, not knowing if they were alive or dead, the fade in Whitebridge and Tom dying so they could escape, the fade in Bearlon, dark friends later, Howl Goad, and the boy who was afraid of them and the woman who tried to kill Matt, the half-man outside the Goose and Crown. When he started babbling about dreams, even the part of him that wanted to talk felt the hackles rising on the back of his neck. He bit his tongue, clamping his teeth shut. Breathing heavily through his nose, he watched the Ogier warily, hoping he thought he had meant nightmares. The light knew it all sounded like a nightmare, or enough to give anyone nightmares. Maybe Loyal would just think he was going mad. Maybe...
Taviran, Loyal said.
Rand blinked. What?
Taviran.
Loyal rubbed behind a pointed ear with one blunt finger and gave a little shrug.
Elder Haman always said I never listened, but sometimes I did. Sometimes I listened. You know how the pattern is woven, of course.
I never really thought about it, he said slowly. It just is.
Yes, well, not exactly. You see, the Wheel of Time weaves the pattern of the ages, and the threads it uses are lives. It is not fixed, the pattern, not always. If a man tries to change the direction of his life and the pattern has room for it, the wheel just weaves on and takes it in. There is always room for small changes, but sometimes the pattern simply won't accept a big change, no matter how hard you try. You understand?
Rand nodded. I could live on the farm or in Emmons Field, and that would be a small change. If I wanted to be a king, though... He laughed, and Loyal gave a grin that almost split his face in two. His teeth were white and as broad as chisels.
Yes, that's it. But sometimes the change chooses you, or the wheel chooses it for you. And sometimes the wheel bends a life thread or several threads in such a way that all the surrounding threads are forced to swirl around it. And those force other threads, and those still others, and on and on. That first bending to make the web, that is Taviran, and there is nothing you can do to change it, not until the pattern itself changes. The web, Tamoral Island, it's called, can last for weeks or for years. It can take in a town or even the whole pattern. Arthur Hawkwing was Taviran. So was Luz Theron Kinslayer, for that matter, I suppose.
He let out a booming chuckle.
Elder Haman would be proud of me. He always droned on, and the books about traveling were much more interesting. But I did listen sometimes.
That's all very well, Rand said, but I don't see what it has to do with me. I'm a shepherd, not another Arthur Hawkwing. And neither is Matt or Perrin. It's just... ridiculous.
I didn't say you were, but I could almost feel the pattern swirl just listening to you tell your tale, and I have no talent there. You are Taviran, all right. You and maybe your friends, too.
The ogre paused, rubbing the bridge of his nose thoughtfully. Finally, he nodded to himself as if he had reached a decision.
I wish to travel with you, Rand.
For a minute, Rand stared, wondering if he had heard correctly. With me? He exclaimed when he could speak. Did you hear what I said about... He eyed the door suddenly. It was shut tight and thick enough that anyone trying to listen on the other side would hear only a murmur, even with his ear pressed against the wooden panels. Just the same, he went on in a lower voice. About who's chasing me? Anyway, I thought you wanted to see your trees.
This book continues on the other side of this cassette. Cassette 15, Side 2.
Just the same, he went on in a lower voice. About who's chasing me? Anyway, I thought you wanted to see your trees.
There is a very fine grove at Tarvalen, and I have been told the Aes Sedai keep it well tended. Besides, it is not just the groves I want to see. Perhaps you are not another Arthur Hawkwing, but for a time at least part of the world will shape itself around you. Perhaps is even now shaping itself around you. Even Elder Haman would want to see that.
Rand hesitated. It would be good to have someone else along. The way Matt was behaving, being with him was almost like being alone. The ogier was a comforting presence. Maybe he was young as ogier reckoned age, but he seemed as unflappable as a rock, just like Tam. And Loyal had been to all of those places and knew about others. He looked at the ogre sitting there with his broad face a picture of patience. Sitting there, and taller sitting than most men standing. How do you hide somebody almost 10 feet tall? He sighed and shook his head. I don't think that is a good idea, Loyal. Even if Moraine finds us here, we'll be in danger all the way to Tarvalen. If she does not...
If she doesn't, then she's dead and so is everyone else. Oh, Egwene.
He gave himself a shake. Egwene was not dead, and Moraine would find them. Loyal looked at him sympathetically and touched his shoulder.
I am sure your friends are well, Rand.
Rand nodded his thanks. His throat was too tight to speak.
Will you at least talk with me sometimes? Loyal sighed, a bass rumble. And perhaps play a game of stones? I have not had anyone to talk to in days, except good Master Gil, and he is busy most of the time. The cook seems to run him unmercifully. Perhaps she really owns the inn?
Of course I will.
His voice was hoarse. He cleared his throat and tried to grin.
And if we meet in Tar Valon, you can show me the grove there.
They have to be all right. Light send, they're all right.